Le temps est comme un cercle qui tournerait sans fin. L'arc qui descend est le passé. Celui qui monte est l'avenir. Tout a été dit, à moins que les mots ne changent de sens, et les sens de mots.
Episode 86 of the Cult of Matt and Mark, Cult Film Review Podcast. I'm Matt.
And I'm Remy Caution.
And make sure to visit us at our blog at cultfilmreview.blogspot.com, or shoot us an email at cultfilmreview@gmail.com. My book has been pushed out to November. I think my publisher bit off a little bit more than they can chew.
With the multiple publishing all in a row?
Yeah, I think they got a little too ambitious and then got ahead of them. So they're pushing me out. You can go to their website, Mask Books, and look for me and my novel, Nova Byzantium, and just stay tuned, I guess.
So did we get the lasers and cat people thing worked out?
No, I haven't even seen cover art yet. That's kind of part of the deal, I think. They're just really behind.
Maybe you could work something up. You've done some drawing, right? Some drawings.
Do some Napoleon Dynamite sketches.
Yeah, get that shading on the lip just right.
That's right, the upper lip, right? So show news, got any show news this week?
I don't have any show news.
I've been watching on the Sci-Fi Channel the reality show Heroes of Cosplay, and I am totally addicted.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's just something about hot, nerdy girls dressing up in vampy anime costumes.
With underboob showing?
No, it's not that bad. But if you want some sort of softcore reality television stuff, go ahead. It's not softcore.
So how's the definition of all the gentlemen's abs?
Well, it's funny because they like follow four or five girls. And it's funny because they're always in the competition. And everybody but them seems to win in these competitions, and their outfits never win. So I don't really know what the deal is. They're not really heroes, in my opinion. They're kind of losers of cosplay.
Hold just a second. Like, there's competitions?
Oh, yeah.
I've never heard of that. I thought you just...
It's just people who dress up as their favorite sci-fi characters.
Well, I know what cosplay is, but I don't understand where is... I thought you just went... It was just a social activity at, like, PAX and various conventions.
I did, too. No. It's a blood sport competition at these cons.
Really?
Yeah. There's, like, professional and amateur categories and team and single categories. And
hold it. You can make a living dressing up in cosplay?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I don't know.
Oh, I never would have thought. That's a whole nother idea.
Yeah. I don't quite know what qualifies as professional. I think most of them are still living with their parents. And some are married to people who actually earn a dime.
Well, it's a hobby, basically.
It is a hobby.
Yeah, I mean, as far as hobbies goes, it's probably not that expensive. You just got to go down to the Hobby Lobby again and pick up some foam and some, you know, some cheap fabric.
Neoprene and lace and...
Yeah, I mean, as far as hobby goes, it's probably not the worst in the world. Certainly not the most expensive.
It seemed very constructive. It was funny. One of the girls went to interview with Blizzard down in SoCal, you know, the people that make World of Warcraft. And she was trying to have this, like, serious internship interview with them. And it was some dorky guys sitting across the table. And I could just see, like, what she was saying was going right through their ear and out the other. And they're just like, you're hired. You're hot. They got to take it where they can get it, those companies. If you're a hot chick and you're gunning for some kind of nerdy vocation, I think you're golden.
So you found that to be the case in engineering?
I do.
There's always hot chicks just beating down the door, wanting to get some of that.
No, there's not that. Action. Oh, no. No, there is not that. But if you are one and you have ambition, you know, you can write your own checks.
You can have sex with any flabby white guy you'd like. I'm pretty sure that's the case everywhere.
Oh, man. Okay, let's get into the movie this week. The movie this week is the 1965 French classic, Alphaville. Not the band, although the band named itself after the film.
There's a band called Alphaville?
There is. Where were you in the 80s?
They were
Forever
in the 80s?
Young? Forever Young? If you never, that's like the prom anthem of the late 80s was Alphaville's Forever Young. I think it was Forever
Young. Oh, well, hell, was that in Napoleon Dynamite?
It was, yeah. Plot rundown real quick. Lemmy Caution, played by Eddie Constantine, an American, by the way. A hero Goddard borrowed from a series of French adventure novels comes to Alphaville, the capital of a totalitarian state, in order to destroy its leader, an almost human computer called Alpha 60. While on his mission, Lemmy meets and falls in love with Natasha, played by Anna Karenina. That's her name, Anna Karenina. Serious. The daughter of the scientist who designed Alpha 60. Their love becomes the most profound challenge to the computer's control. Void of any flashy special effects, Alphaville uses 1960s Paris to depict the city of the future. And it says here a totalitarian state, but it's a different planet, according to the film.
Well, the film is somewhat unclear about exactly what the arrangement of society is. You're right that you get the feeling that it's a community of humans among the stars, but the film isn't tied to that. I don't think that Godard's actually very careful about that aspect of it. I think he either purposely muddies it or he doesn't really give a shit whether you're confused how exactly the universe is arranged and the power structure is.
I don't think anybody gives a shit because Lemmy Caution drives in to Alphaville in his own Ford Mustang or Ford Galaxy in the film's case, and he leaves the same way. So
you can imagine the movie's just made with proper special effects. He would get into his starship and fly off at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that's what Godard was going for.
So I think this worked as far as just filming Paris as if it's another planet, another city. I found it fine. I didn't think it suffered.
No, I didn't have a problem with that at all. I mean, it's similar to a stage play where a box can be all sorts of different things. You just sort of have to let your mind fill in the gaps. And I think that's a fine way to film make, personally. It's very similar to other forms of storytelling where things are just described or hinted at. In this case, they're described and hinted at with audiovisual cues.
I've read plenty of science fiction novels that don't, I guess, that are set on other worlds, but don't really dive deep into world building. What they kind of do is it's sort of a facsimile of our current modern city states that, or the modern world. Cities, restaurants, police state. There's nothing really unique or odd or strange culturally, architecturally, when I read these novels. And so it's just like they kind of copy our world and put it on another world, and that's fine. And that's kind of what happened here.
Yeah, they make the changes they make are the changes. They start with our world and then change it in such a way that we see the differences as reflected to our current world, just like the behaviors of the people in this city.
Right.
The starting point is our world as the viewer knows it, and then it perturbs it from that position.
So, yeah, cinematically it worked. They did some filmmaking work to kind of make it look a little futuristic using modern parts of Paris, modern interiors, some kind of outdated, I guess, computer technology to give it a little futuristic zing.
There was some set dressing. But that's as far as it went, because there was some lettering placed on cars and doors and whatnot to give the feeling, like the police headquarters is called the Department of Dissuasion.
Yeah, right. I like that. All right. So one thing I wanted to talk about with this film is the concept of dystopias and utopias, and why we sort of glom onto them in storytelling and theme. The thing about this movie, and it reminded me a lot of THX-1138, basically, with the muting of emotion and passion of its population in THX-1138. It was through drugs. Here, it's just kind of threat of execution.
Oh, no, it's drugs. People are always popping pills through this whole movie.
I didn't notice that.
Oh, every scene... people are popping pills. Like, just at the very beginning, of the movie, when Lemmy comes to his hotel room, the seductress class three, the first one he sees,
yeah.
I forget her name, she says, "Oh, your tranquilizers are here," and puts them on okay. the on the bathroom shelf. And then just a few minutes later, after some rather weird scenes, and this is the first time
yeah,
we're
really
watching the
scenes.
Behavior of these characters, and it's very disconcerting at the beginning of the film. But Natasha comes in and is sort of walking around the hotel room, and she just happens, while she's standing in the bathroom, happens to pick up that bottle of tranquilizers and just pop one.
Okay.
Very nonchalantly. And you see other characters constantly reaching into their pockets and having pills throughout the entire
so,
film.
So, it's like a tranquilizer, though. It's or is it some futuristic pill that we're not meant
to
Well,
whatever know, it or... is, it's a way to dampen your emotions so you can conform to society, I believe.
Right.
When it's a capital offense to cry at your wife's death, you need something to dull it.
So, it reminded me a lot of THX-1138, but even that is... All this stuff is based on 1984 type of dystopia that sort of set the boilerplate for all future dystopian works. I don't know. And even now, dystopia is real popular, especially with the Hunger Games coming out. People love that shit. And to me, I think as far as a sci-fi theme, there's utopias and dystopias, and there's sort of the black and white of, I guess, what we would consider political ideology. White is it's perfect, black is it's completely imperfect. And then where we live is some shade of gray in between. And with all sci-fi, I kind of find these dystopias, and it depends on how you define dystopias. I kind of consider them sort of a totalitarian thing, unlike sort of a chaotic dystopia like Blade Runner, but more, you know, like North Korea type of dystopia.
Well, you certainly get that North Korean feeling from this film on several instances. I had a because actually Kim Jong-un recently killed his old girlfriend for doing like a racy stage production of some song.
Yeah, she probably had it coming. That's all I'm saying.
So you get the Harley. Feeling of North Korea, especially some of the guards that you see around, just sort of these, they almost look like mannequins dressed up with a rifle.
Right. So, but like a perfect dystopia, and I always think of a perfect dystopia that engineers its population to conform almost to the T. And you can see it seep into our current, I guess, modern day here in the U.S. with things like traffic light cameras, which I know you hate. In London, you know, they have a lot of surveillance of every street corner, that sort of thing. So I always think of a dystopia as you're penalized for every rule you break. Everything you do can be judged and penalized. And nobody wants to live under that. We want to live with some discretion with regard to the way we dole out, I guess, our punitive actions or penalties.
Well, just think about if every law on the books in the U.S. was enforced without fail at every instance it was violated, the whole country would come to a screeching halt.
Well, I was thinking, like, I had an idea the other day. What if you put in a GPS tracker into every single car, and every time you went above the speed limit, like by a mile per hour, you were sent a fine accordingly. So it would be like prorated. So if you're going like 10 or 15 miles an hour, that would obviously be a bigger fine than if you were just going 1 mile per hour. But even if you go over by 1 mile per hour, you get sent a bill.
Every plank time, you get sent a bill.
Every plank time?
Yeah.
What's that?
That's like the hypothetical minimum unit of time passage.
Correct. Yeah. That's, what is it? E
it's something
equals
incredibly tiny
HF.
Amount.
In the film, you see that a lot,
mm-hmm.
coincidentally. I don't know if it had anything to do with what you just said, but yeah. Planck's constant times F, which is a quantum of energy, equals E. And then, of course, you get E equals MC squared, which is the rest mass of subatomic particles. Wow. Sorry, just brought down the podcast there. Slowed it up a little bit.
Well, I'm just saying, how often do you get fined? What's the minimum time unit? I mean, if you get fined for speeding, you basically get a free ride to speed as much as you want for some period of time, correct?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Right. You would have to meter it maybe by the mile. I don't know. But yeah, still, yeah. I mean, if even if that wasn't enacted, it would almost be an insufferable place to live. Could you imagine?
You'd have to install a limiter on your car that somehow knew exactly what the speed limit at every part wouldn't allow.
So you just stomp on it basically everywhere you go. You're just stomping on it. You know?
Stomping. Yeah, you just floor it and your car goes as fast as it's legally allowed, which would really interrupt my commute because I like getting up to about 90 or so in my commute every day. That's my goal every day, to get it up to 90 at some point on the I-5.
Where do you hit 90? I can't even think of a place you would hit 90.
Oh, just the first part of my commute. And then as soon as I hit Linwood, the fucking, it's backed up.
Oh, okay. So right where you get there, like near Mukilteo Interchange and on, you can get up to past the mall. That's what you're saying. You get up to 90.
Yeah, I get up to 90, and then I hit my brakes for the rest of the time into Seattle.
Yeah, I always used to get really frustrated on my I-5 commutes. And when the red light would go green for the on-ramp, I used to see how fast I could get my car up before I had to merge into traffic at 5 miles per hour. That was always my big, and then I would hit the brakes. And just
my favorite part of those lights? Just ignoring them.
It's a good thing to do.
I've never, ever seen anybody stand there and enforce those on-ramp lights. Never once in my life.
Yeah.
I got another HOV warning letter in the mail. I was pretty excited about that. And I haven't even been violating the HOV much lately. So somebody's really getting on top of it.
So here in Washington State, we have our HOV lane, which is commuter lane.
Oh, 1-800-HERO.
And you can rat out your fellow commuters. And Mark's been ratted out, twice?
Just twice. You get a flyer that says, you didn't know what HOV lanes, how they work. So here's a flyer explaining how they function.
You got to educate. Wow, educate your dumb ass.
The flyer says right on the front, this is not a ticket.
Well, I want to see how many you can rack up. I almost wanted
I just threw them away. Maybe I should have kept them on my wall.
I kind of wanted to report myself for a while just to test the system.
No, you just get the license plate and that flyer sent to the registered owner.
Okay, so it's a pointless system, that phone number.
You could call. You know what you could do? Get a burner cell phone, and just start calling in random license plates, and see if you can have them run out of flyers.
just hack the system.
But that'd take a lot of time. Each flyer would be a separate phone call. What a pain in the ass.
I know, but hey, man, that's the price of revolution. That's what you got to do. So
I got to hire some guy in China to do it. Oh, that's a great idea.
So back to our dystopian argument. I guess in sci-fi it's a theme, and what it is sort of an extrapolation on current features of our society that I think bug us or are mandated by the state or are conforming us in some fashion. Do they have a lot to say? I think they're cautionary, obviously. They're a cautionary tale. And 1984 was written by George Orwell to fill that niche literarily. Since dystopias, I don't know. I don't know if anything more can be said about them.
Well, I think, remember, a lot of these cautionary tales were told 50 years ago, 60 years ago. How long was this? This movie's almost 50 years old. Almost 50 years old. 64, right?
Yeah.
So I think the world's actually changed in a lot of ways, very similar to these sort of authoritarian societies, where men are ruled not by their hearts, but by probabilities. Don't you think that the world's moved in that direction? That weren't these dystopias somewhat prescient for the time we live in today? And maybe we don't really notice it because we're a product of our current times. And as all things, society can change in amazing ways as long as you let it change over the course of generations. I mean, once you grow up and you're sort of indoctrinated into the cultural norms of your time, they don't seem weird, even though they would seem absurd to somebody removed just two or three generations out of it.
Right. So let's talk about what this film is centered on, which is, I guess, technocracy or a society that's run completely by a computer. This is something I actually was kind of.
It's not so much a computer; it's more run by logic. It's run more, if anything, by sort of the scientific method, by observing the world for what it is, for what you see and what you can measure, and making your decisions based solely on reality and not on the feelings and vicissitudes of the heart.
Right. And I was watching this and I was wondering, what is the goal of Alpha 60? What is its objective in, I guess, dictating a society from, as if a computer program would, controlling all its parts, auditing all its parts, making sure all its parts are working together and synchronized.
What organization doesn't do that?
Well,
what organization,
but, I mean,
you've never ever worked for doesn't have that goal of efficiency and purposefulness in all of its actions? The movie goes so far as to say that it is the nature of all organizations to plan their actions completely.
Well, I would say, see, I'm much more of a cynic. I would say it's the nature of governments to form kleptocracy, basically a society to enrich the powerful and the wealthy. And I don't
what
ever see a society.
Organization doesn't do that? Why
no,
do
I understand that.
And,
that's what I'm saying. Every organization does do that. But in the case of Alphaville, where you have a sentient, non-materialistic entity controlling everything, what is its goal? What does it want to do? Is it just, it's obviously following its programming, but what was the idea behind its programming? To just keep this society functioning?
It's a natural sentient being that has its own interests. It wants to exist and create itself a permanence in this world, I think. I mean, just look at what the story says about Alphaville. Basically, the idea is that there's these various communities of humans in these sort of galactic city-states, something along those lines.
Sure.
And we spend the whole time in Alphaville, and Alphaville calls the rest of human civilization the Outlands. But you got to remember, that viewpoint is very Alpha-centric. But you do get the idea that Alphaville is a new city-state on the landscape that's been founded by Von Braun, and he was actually had some radical societal ideas so far as he was thrown out of society at a large, the Outlands. And he created his idea of a cityscape, and this city has become very powerful.
Right. They're talking about invading the rest of the Outlands or the outer countries. It's, you know, that's kind of the reason that Lemmy Caution is there, from what I understand. He's there to take down this threat.
Yeah, the Outlands is worried about the rise of power of Alphaville. Alphaville's has been very successful. I mean, if anything, what is the judge of success other than being extant and being more powerful than those around you? Alphaville is a success by natural processes.
Maybe it's conforming to all societies and ideologies of the past, of all of humanity's societal endeavors. It's looking for power just like everybody else, is what you're saying. It's not any different.
Continue itself, and it's been very successful in that. It's grown powerful by using the techniques of probability, by planning its actions beyond what humans can do. I mean, it says that these computers can tackle questions that are beyond the abilities of the human mind. It's sort of an old idea of artificial intelligence that, you know, there's the old idea. I mean, it's popular now with the whole singularity bullshit. And believe me, I'm
you don't like
the
singularity bullshit, do you? What's
I think it'd
that?
Be great. I think it's a bit of a pipe dream. I think there's just some,
right.
I think there's some engineering tasks that need to be overcome first. But the idea that if you really could create a being with an intellect much greater than a human, then it would go on to think about things that you could never even understand. It would become ascended being that basically would be godlike to us. And that's what Alpha 60 is.
For our listeners who are unaware, the singularity, was it theory, I guess, idea in science fiction is that we'll create an intelligence greater than ourselves. And at that point, society will change in such a way that we can no longer predict.
We won't know what will happen. The only thing we can say is that humanity will become sort of obsolete as far as the most intelligent, the best example of the universe knowing itself in our local area that we can have dominion over.
The paradigm of survival will have completely changed.
Yeah, and in ways that we can't comprehend. Not only, we won't even know it when it's happening, I think is the idea. It'll be beyond us.
And so to know things that, you know, there's some, I forget the quote, but it's if a lion could talk and if a lion could speak English, we wouldn't understand what it's saying. I think that's kind of the idea that, like, as higher intelligence are concerned, if a higher intelligence talks, there's no guarantee that we would ever be able to understand it. And maybe Alpha 60 is somewhere in that realm, attempting to communicate to its lower beings. But in the case of me,
do you understand what Alpha 60 says throughout this?
Actually,
film?
Fuck no,
it?
Most not really. It had this whole bit about, and that was the voice, that kind of demonic voice we heard at the beginning.
I love that voice. That's
which actually
so awesome.
Is one of the? It's one of those voice boxes they give to people who, you know, have throat cancer.
Oh, it's just a little vibrator you put on your throat and then you speak.
Yeah,
through.
but it's some guy speaking French. So that's kind of where we got that from. But it goes on about sort of these philosophical musings about time and tangents and the present versus the future and the past. And I tried to kind of sit and camp out on that idea a little bit. And I don't know if I got anywhere, but that's kind of where it's forcing its inhabitants is to exist only in the present, which means forgoing. I mean, we are our past. We are our memories. We are that defines us. And the future defines our motivations. So if you're just left with none of that other than to just merely exist, you're sort of forced into being a lower being, almost like an insect or something that doesn't have those higher notions of nostalgia or hope or dreams or things like that.
Well, there you go, man. You've just described the denizens of Alphaville. You don't need to plan your future. What you do tomorrow is already dictated. Alpha 60 knows what you need to do. You simply need to execute the plan. You don't need to think about the future. You only need to be in the present.
So to numb its population to that idea, it seems that the computer uses level 3 seductresses and tranquilizers to sort of mute, to keep everybody in the present, keep everybody satisfied. And even though people do have jobs and go about their business, it has to somehow incentivize the present and dismiss any other time frame, which I don't know if is exactly possible or feasible, or I could believe it.
Look, the one movie's got it right. There's been one movie in the history of films that it's got the idea of what I really think that post the singularity, if it exists, what will happen. And that's the Terminator series. The truth is that if you have a great intelligent being who can manipulate the world to its own ends because it can see beyond what we can see, humans are pointless things. The only reason to keep them around would be as a curiosity. Like, we keep various populations of cetaceans alive. Why do we keep them alive? Just because of this notion that they should probably be allowed to live.
Right. Well, like why we try to get pandas to fuck.
Yeah, it's simply because we want them to continue to exist.
And they're cute. Pandas are cute, man. Sure. You gotta have pandas in the baby room or it's just not complete. You gotta have the fuzzy little pandas. So, yeah, all right.
But Alpha 60 just uses people as just a tool like any machine. And it does whatever it needs to make those machines work. And that means
they would be replaced with robots or androids if he could. Or if
Alpha
could,
60, but once Alpha 60 figures it out, and if it's more efficient, and if it calculates that it's better for the future of Alphaville, then it will execute that plan like it does any other plan.
Yeah, but you still see the trappings. Obviously, it's filmed in Paris. So you still see the trappings of a society that is not betrothed to this whole philosophy. I mean, there's restaurants and hotels and I don't know if there was, you know,
there's
do
you ever see people having fun in this entire movie?
Well, that's not what I'm talking about, but I guess if you sort of forgive the setting a little bit, then yeah, nobody's having any
fun. People are never recreating in this entire movie.
Well, they're fucking. They're fucking people a lot.
They're fucking, and simply, I think it's just a way, it's sort of like a drug. Just like, it's just something that Alpha 60 deemed that the humans need in order to function at a basic level.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, there's a Harlan Ellison short story. I don't know if you've read it, but it's called I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. Have you ever read that?
I have, but remind me of the storyline.
It's basically, I think there's these 9 human beings left on the planet Earth, and they're trapped in this vast subterranean world on the planet. And they're constantly being tortured by this omniscient machine that is sadistic and continues to torture them. And I forget how contact is made with the machine. But at the end, what you realize is that the machine has nothing but pure hatred for the human animal and delights in torturing and ruining them. I'm thinking that, like, Alpha 60 has maybe a little bit of that, because you don't think so?
I think that Alpha 60 is strictly a being of logic. It doesn't have emotion.
Okay. All right.
I don't think it's torturing its inhabitants. It's just using them. It's just another piece of the world to manipulate to its ends.
Yeah, maybe that wasn't a good analogy. There's an awesome story, though. Check it out.
No, it is a very cool story. That's for sure. I do remember.
Well, your whole thing is that the machines must destroy us, right? The machines to you know, that's how we will succeed, is through our own destruction. And
well, they must destroy us or ignore us. Those are really, for a great being, a godlike being that's omniscient and omnipotent from our point of view, that's the only, I guess it could make pets of us. That's sort of how you look, talking about these worlds that are created post-singularity. I mean, one of the more popular ones is by the recently author, the Culture series. What is that author's name?
Oh, Ian M. Banks.
Is that's a post-singularity civilization. And for some reason, the singularity left the omniscient beings that are created by that somehow have a fondness for humanity, or, you know, lesser organic beings, and keep them around sort of as interesting pets.
Well, it's not in, I don't know, is it sort of a law of nature to destroy your creator? I don't know if that's necessarily true.
I don't think that's necessarily true, but why do you have to care about your creator? That's one thing that always sort of was off to me about the Culture novels, that that the omniscient beings give a shit about the humans or the
humanoids? You have a reverence, right? You have to have a reverence, you know, for I have a reverence for societies of the past, that carried us forward, even though they may have been lesser beings.
But reverence is just sort of a human emotion. Once you've logged the facts about the past and you understand it, what's the point in keeping the trappings of the past other than emotion? Why do I keep a few storage containers full of little tidbits from the last 40 years of my life? Why do I keep these little knickknacks? They only suit to remind me of times. They have no purpose. They just sit for me to go through every once in a while. It's a very human trait, and I just don't think a being of pure logic like Alpha 60 would care much about that. It doesn't seem to in this film.
Well, and it makes a point of saying it doesn't care about that. The past is nothing, as well as the future, and it only exists in the present. And I think there's a whole
humanity is a slave to the past. This is a bunch of poetry that Godard lifted from somewhere. I'm not familiar.
Right. It's time is a substance of which I am made. It's paraphrased from a 1946 essay, "That A New Refutation of Time," by Argentinian writer and fantasist Jorge Luis Borges. Our destiny is not frightful by being unreal. It is frightful because it is irreversibly an iron. It is irreversible and ironclad. Time is the substance I am made of. Time is a river which sweeps me along, but I am the river. It is a tiger which destroys me, but I am the tiger. Blah, 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 blah. I don't know.
It's very evocative, kind of nonsense.
It is, but it's a little too metaphoric.
I think it's something you sort of need to get into, like a bath, and sort of let it percolate into your body slowly. I can see there you might find your own deep meaning there, sort of like meditation, if you care to spend some time with it.
Well, I view poetry almost like I view art. I mean, it's a piece of art, obviously, but more as an evocative media as opposed to something where there's meaning buried in it and you must, as like an archaeologist, unearth it. Yeah, and find out what the author the poet intended. And I think
it's a mode. It's a mode that allows you to understand yourself.
Right, exactly. So it could mean something completely different to another person, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it means something to Alpha 60. Maybe it's weird that for a society that outlaws poetry, Alpha 60 seems to be steeped in it.
I know.
Because maybe that's where it finds the ability to, I don't know, maybe it's evoking itself to try to understand itself better. Maybe it finds, that's an interesting idea that in the end, it's made humanities no more than insects, no more than machines in a great endeavor. But itself, it still doesn't know itself enough. So it turns back to these human ideas of art and poetry in order to explore itself. Sort of interesting. Well,
and it still has these little interrogation rooms, these little sort of, I forget what they were called in the film, nodes, like sensing
nerve
nodes.
Nerve
bundles, where humans can go in and interact with Alpha 60. And there's obviously something, it wouldn't do that unless there was something to be learned from a human being.
I think that's all part of its Grand Omega Minus plan they talk about in the movie, which is sort of like a counterintelligence operation. It's part of its war-making operation against the Outlands, because I think it knows that it's at an existential threat by the Outlands because of its growing power.
It's funny that there's this, I almost took it as a slam against other nations, but how was it Swedes and Americans fit really well into Alphaville for some reason? Like they work well with it. I was trying to get out what the criticism was of America with regard to the fact that human beings from there are easily assimilated into Alpha 60.
That's what Henri Johnson says.
Right. I think whoever that is. Who's that?
That's the sort of alcoholic spy that dies in this movie that
sees.
By the time you meet Henri, you sort of have the movie sort of explained sort of the generalities of how society's structured here, and it starts to make sense, the weird behavior of the inhabitants of Alphaville. But I like how he talks about how people have, there's really only three outcomes for people that come to Alphaville. Either you assimilate, you kill yourself, a very small percentage of that then are executed.
Yeah.
And then there's actually a fourth, the fourth that just sort of live on the outskirts that are neither executed nor assimilate or kill themselves.
And you never see them.
A rare number of people. Oh, and Henri's one of them. He says there's very few of us left that haven't met those three ends.
So as far as the movie goes, I appreciated, I guess, its sci-fi themes, the way that it was filmed using no special effects, sort of bringing to the surface the theme, science fiction themes, and not detracting, which a lot of special effects wizardry can do from what the movie's trying to discuss. But the problem I had with this movie was, to me, the plot kind of fragmented. And when I say the plot fragmented, I lost the plot at many times watching this. And I read through the plot on Wikipedia, and I'm like, okay, then this happens, and then he goes on and does this. And there's these stages to Lemmy Caution's, I guess, agenda. He comes as a newspaper reporter, but he's really a clandestine agent sent to destroy Alpha 60.
I mean, that's made pretty clear in the first half of the film, which I like the first half of the film where Godard's drawing this city And I think, and its inhabitants and their strange behavior, and explains it to the viewer. Now, I watched the beginning half of this movie a couple times just to really soak myself in it, because it's very disconcerting at first. You're very lost when you first see the movie, and maybe that's...
Which is nice, and that's classic science fiction, being able to do that, to completely disorient the reader or the viewer, is, I find, good science fiction. One of the reasons I like the movie. But the plot, I don't know if you had a comment about the plot.
So, can we say we're pretty clear on what happens in the first half of the movie, up until the point where Lemmy first goes to the sort of central communication banks. Like, let's just say when he finds himself with the head engineer down with all the tape memory banks. Are we pretty clear on the plot up to that point? Because really it's just sort of explaining how Alphaville works to you and how much of an outsider Lemmy is. Are we pretty much clear on what happens up to that point?
Yeah, no, I'm fine.
And I think
that's
the way it draws the characters, and you understand the behaviors of the individuals, and you listen to Alpha 60's talk a couple times, and you realize that, you know, it's just sort of like an anthill. Alphaville's sort of like an anthill, and all the people are just drones. All that. But after that point, it is confusing, is it not?
I found motivation confusing. And I found, like, Anna, is that her name?
The
actress, Natasha.
Oh, that's Natasha von Braun.
Because you've sort of kind of broken a piece of the hive, a way to use the anthill analogy, and for whatever reason, it's like she comes out of the fog, and sort of the cheesy line at the end where she says, like, robotically, "I love you."
You know, it's amazing that I actually teared up a little bit at that point. And I couldn't quite understand why I did, because my mind told me, God, this is a little dumb.
Yeah.
But still, emotion was invoked in me outside of my control. It's almost like Godard had gotten to my head a little bit and was squeezing some part of my old brain without my volition.
Wow.
In a way, it was strangely powerful, though I understand what you're saying. It seems a little trite.
Yeah, when you think about it on here.
I'm just saying how I felt.
No.
But so you're complaining about the plot. So why don't we just talk about the plot in the second half of the movie?
No, I read the plot. I understand the plot. I don't want to dissect
it. I'm still not quite clear what happened at the end of this film.
Well, I'm just reading it off of Wikipedia, and I don't want to really paraphrase it. But what I'm talking about is the fact that the film lost me watching it. And I've had this criticism of a lot of science fiction where they push forward the big theme, the world building, and the plot kind of almost exists sort of ancillary.
You're right.
Like, you need, I guess it's a story. I need a plot to kind of fill it. And you get sort of a patchwork occasionally, or actually a lot of times, with sci-fi storytelling. And what happens is I get almost myopic reading it. Or watching it, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to pay attention to this scene and try to get as much out of it as I can. And I know I'm not really knowing, like, from a black box perspective, what's coming in, what's going out, but I just kind of want to feel the scene and get an impression and, like, be led on a tour of this world that somebody's built for me. The conversation, and maybe that's just me not having good comprehension skills. I don't know. But it's a lot of times when I get lost and things aren't straightforward, I kind of sort of give up and throw in the towel, and I just focus on other things in the film. And I kind of did that with this movie, and even though I kind of had the general sense of, like, okay, he has to go, you know, shut down Alpha 60, and he does that with some kind of bit of poetry about love that he gives the machine, and it sends it into a loop,
and
it dies.
Understand that part.
Trying to, I guess, tease out the humanity of Natasha, although that's not really a plot point. That's kind of a idea or a theme. I guess just the machinations of his espionage, I just got lost, and I didn't care. I stopped caring.
I mean, there's not much story here. It is world building. That's where the strength of the movie is. I mean, he's a secret agent, goes to a foreign land. He's supposed to kill some great engineer that's an evil guy. Hell, his real name is Nosferatu.
All right.
Right?
I know. Yeah.
And he goes and he does that. That's the story. And he gets the hell out of town. Right. He picks up some chick and falls in love with her. She's been destroyed by this town, and maybe he has a chance to redeem her. I mean, isn't that the story?
Well, maybe
that's not much. That's pretty straightforward. That's a pretty simple tale. I mean, if anything, that's a good choice. If you want to spend your time world building, you make the story as bare bones as possible. The only point I don't understand is why Alpha 60 stops working. I don't understand that.
Well, and yeah, that's kind of what I'm talking about. The logic sort of fell apart a little bit.
That's only one thing, okay? Right?
Well, it is and it isn't. And unfortunately, I watched this movie about a week and a half ago, so I'm not really, I can't get in my head that far back in the past.
No, I don't think we need to overcomplicate this, Matt. I think you have a good idea of what happens in the story.
No, I do.
The story part of this movie. So, I mean,
but
understanding here?
Well, I would come across scenes where something important, well, like when he went to talk to Heckle and Jekyll, they were talking about, I mean, I was like, well, what's the purpose of this? Is this just to tell me about the plans for Alpha 60 of the invasion?
Yeah, I think
what's he doing there? Is he just there for information, or is he trying to, I guess, climb up through the hierarchy to get close to Von Braun? And
well, look, let me explain that to you before you just throw up your hands about this part, that particular element of the story. He gets interviewed by Alpha 60. Alpha 60 decides that Lemmy must see the central core of Alpha 60, that Alpha 60 must show itself to Lemmy. We don't know why that is. It is simply the logical conclusion of Alpha 60. We can't understand Alpha 60. Alpha 60 is beyond us. And Lemmy's just along for the ride.
Well, to me, that just seemed like an excuse to expand on the technology or the philosophy of the city. And I
think that's true. It was an excuse, yeah.
Well, I know, and I always have a problem with that in science fiction where it's called the data dump. You know, where you have a character who's like, well, this gun is an ultra mega recoilless laser cannon Mark 9, and it, you know, uses, where you just kind of blobbity blobbity blah 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 about, you know, you don't maybe give the reader or viewer the benefit of the doubt, and you just kind of data dump on them, where it wouldn't really be real.
Well, I think you're correct. You're right. The whole Alpha 60 explanation is a rather dense piece about the machinations of Alpha 60. I mean, what is that called? The Grand Omega Minus counterintelligent plan. You're right. That is confusing. You know, there's one part about there, and I totally agree with your critique of that particular element of the story. But one part I found really interesting about that, and it really made me realize that there is no deception in the people of Alphaville. They are the engineers, Heckle and Jekyll, and the other chief engineer. They are completely honest with Lemmy. They don't even try to make a ruse. Alpha 60 says this Grand Omega Minus plan must be revealed to Lemmy, and they just tell him about it. Oh, we're going to brainwash you and then send you back into the Outlands to be part of our calendar intelligence program. And they're just so matter of fact about it. It's really, I think it's a real telling part of the behavioral aspects of these people that live in Alphaville. I think it's pretty interesting that there's really no lying. There's no deception in this world, which I think is really
fascinating. Well, to have a sense of deception, you have to have a sense of the future.
Yeah, and they don't.
And they don't. So the computer has a plan. It has it has some plan for the future, but that's pretty much the only entity in the city that does.
That's right. And I think that part right there, even though it is a bit of a data dump, and I think it is a bit of a fault of the film, I think that really drove home. I mean, it really sunk that nail all the way down about how incredibly mindless the people have become of this town.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And maybe that has a whole comment on technology in our society and making us mindless.
I think it does.
Like the cell phone zombies that you always see YouTube videos of, you know, they're walking around looking down and then run into a lamppost or a bus or something because they're totally texting or Facebooking or whatever the fuck. I guess maybe that's a cautionary tale. I've seen it before.
We sort of read roughshod over the prescience of this movie. And
Is it prescient? I think I've seen it too many times in too many different forms to find it groundbreaking in its themes. And that's not a criticism of the film exactly. It's just sort of, a person who reads science fiction almost exclusively and writes it and absorbs it constantly. I've kind of come to the conclusion that you only have so many themes in science fiction, and each time you endeavor to recreate, it's the originality gets watered down a bit. And I just kind of saw this as, it's sort of like for its era, sort of new wave science fiction, sort of the science fiction that came out in the 60s, which was more social commentary than, I guess, your typical Buck Rogers exploration and kind of ideas. But I just, I guess I didn't find it novel enough to champion it, so to speak.
Well, I think that because that our society and yourself has taken on some of the opinions of Alpha 60, that everything's been said before.
Well, no, not everything. But it is, I mean, it has some prescient ideas, I suppose, technology muting human interaction. I mean, is that kind of, would you take that away from the film?
I'm more about the, I mean, just think about, whenever I think about people and their behaviors, and Lemmy's the idea that the heart and your conscience is the great, driver of that character, that he shoots first and asks questions later, and somehow that's the right thing to do. I mean, this movie lauds it a little bit, the idea of love.
Right.
But when I think about humans, I try not to think about them as a gentleman of the mid-20th century. I try to think about a Viking from the 1100s. Think about his passions and his behaviors and what he thinks is right in the world. And I mean, we've constantly moved away from our passions over the years. And I don't think it's that absurd to think that this progression of moving away from passionate behavior shouldn't be suppressed to the point of non-existence at some point in the future.
Well,
like we see in this movie.
You're just talking about suppressing the human animal, suppressing
I mean, just look about the difference between the 60s and urges. Now. People smoked and drank like crazy back then. I mean, people don't really do it. They certainly don't smoke these days. You certainly don't drive drunk like you used to. I mean, destructive, natural, passionate behaviors of humans continues to be suppressed over time.
Well, and all vice in our society is viewed as an illness. That's another thing. Mm-hmm. Everybody talks like, oh, well, you have an illness. You're a sexual addict. That's an illness. Or you're an alcoholic. That's an illness. Or, you're a gambler. Well, you're that's an illness. I mean, everything that's associated with vice has sort of been thrown into the clinical scientific realm. We must treat
because it
that.
Is the clinical scientific realm. We are slaves to probabilities. Look, somebody back in the 70s goes, I wonder if all that smoke haze that's coming off of cigarettes is hurting more than just the smoker. And so they crunch the fucking numbers on secondhand smoking. Guess what? Kills a lot of people.
I know.
They go, I wonder, if we had a way to strap people into their seat in their car, like some sort of belt, would that improve survivability in automobile crashes? Oh, you know what? Look at that. It does. It really improves survivability a lot. So what does society do in these two circumstances? It outlaws smoking in public places, inside buildings. It outlaws not wearing your seatbelt in your own fucking car.
Yeah, click it or ticket.
Right. We are, in a lesser way to this movie, we do continue to become more and more slaves to probabilities and number crunching because the numbers are true. What Alpha 60 calculates is reality. It doesn't calculate passion. And I think that in a way that we continue to move in that direction, is it a bad thing or a good thing? I'm not passing judgment on it.
Well, I will. I'll say that the further we get from the human animal, the more survivable we become as a society. I mean, the less, the less we can suppress our destructive tendencies and the more sustainable we view humanity, the more we'll perpetuate At what expense? I guess maybe this movie hints at it. I don't know. But
I think it's something that human people should keep in mind. You said it's all been said before. This is a bunch of trod territory. It's a bunch of, you know, a bunch of trite musings that we've seen a million times.
I didn't say it was trite musings.
That I don't think that most people at large have this idea in their mind. They never think about the cost of being a slave to probability. It's not something that crosses the man on the street's mind. And I think that society might be bettered if people kept that in mind.
See, that's why I'm a terrible teacher. Because I just assume that everybody's come along with me on my cynical journey, and that everybody's gotten to this point of viewing society and humanity the same way. And I guess maybe that's not true, or you know, there wouldn't be any churches left.
But in the end, I think the strongest point we agree on of this film is its world building. It's a fucking awesome world building.
All right, we're getting on the hour.
We read the New York Times review by Bosley Crowther. That's an interesting name, Crowther, written on October 26th of 1965. Generally, it's a down review. He starts off by saying, the trouble with Alphaville is that it shifts gears about in the middle, which is sort of what Matt said. It begins as a fast-moving prank that combines the character on the Order of James Bond and the fascinations of a slick science fiction mystery. And he says it has some brisk satiric mischief. Not sure exactly what he means there. But halfway through, it swings abruptly into a solemn allegorical account of this sudden sobered fellow with a weird computer-controlled society. And he says that it becomes a tedious tussle with intellectual banalities.
It kind of does, a little bit.
Hold on. We were just talking about deep about how we're losing our humanity and becoming enslaved to probabilities.
Well, we got to fill the hour.
A tedious tussle of intellectual banalities?
Yeah, we got to
really
fill the hour.
A banality that
no,
we
it's
become
not
a slave to facts and reason?
I think he was probably injecting more into his own personal feelings about the discussions going on in the film and then actually the content. So.
Well, I think it is in the way it is banal. I mean, who would argue against things that improve our society's survivability and prosperousness? Only the artist would argue against that. Only the poet.
Yeah,
only the musician.
You're right. Okay.
Up to this point, this offbeat picture has all the momentum and promise of a super atomic age spy film.
I don't know. What the fuck? Is he thinking like, he's probably thinking of like Thunderball or Dr. No or something.
I don't know what he's seeing. This movie the whole half of this movie is like, welcome to this fucking dystopia. Here's how it works, right?
Yeah, right.
There's no fast-paced action. I mean, there is a part where he just kills some guy
after
he
weird.
Insults his sister.
That's
I mean,
really
how
weird.
Is that? How is that an exciting James Bond film? It's fucking nonsensical until you understand the society in which Lemmy's inhabiting. I don't know what he's talking about. I don't think he watched that part very carefully. He says, Alphaville has the neon-lighted hardness of a modern city where none but gangsters dwell. That's just plain wrong.
Well, he's thinking, he's
using his tropes of the time.
Yeah, the problem with his review is it's prejudiced because he sees, oh, this is a noir film. So where's the shady gangsters? Oh, they must be there.
I just don't see them. All I see are a bunch of automatons and Lemmy. Yeah, you're right. He says, inhumanity stalks the corridors of the glass and metal buildings that seem to immolate a breed of muscular ghosts. That makes no sense to me.
Wow.
Why would
that's
they
like
immolate
something.
A breed of muscular ghosts?
Yeah, that's like something that he had sitting in a notebook from his creative writing class at NYU, you know? And then he's like, oh, I'm going to use this. I've never used this little snippet of verbiage. Yeah,
I understand. Inhumanity does stalk the corridors of these glass and metal buildings because that's the very nature of these human inhabitants. They're inhuman. Right. I don't see where they're immolating ghosts at any point. And can you
burning,
do that?
Burning
are they even made
ghost?
Of carboniferous materials that could burn?
Anyways, obviously, this is a figurative discussion, but I don't know.
I like that. Immolate. I'm going to use that at some point. I'm not sure what it means, but it sure is very evocative.
Wait a minute. Read that again. Where is it at?
It's right in the middle. It says,
okay.
Inhumanity stalks the corridors of the glass and metal buildings that seem to immolate a breed of muscular ghosts.
That does immolate is set fire to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
A breed of muscular ghosts.
Sorry. I just like that sentence. It doesn't make any sense.
That's kind of fucked up. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. All right, moving on.
See here. He goes on to say the movie gets into a low gear halfway through. And Lemmy Caution gets involved with a slow-eyed, slow-witted maiden who doesn't know the meaning of the word love.
Well, yeah. It's weird to use slow-eyed, S-L-O-E, and slow-witted, S-L-O-W.
What does slow-eyed mean?
Slow-eyed is... the way I think a slow-eyed is kind of inverted crescent moon eyes, like the sort of sleepy, a little sleepy, maybe a little bit eastern. Yeah, kind of turned down a little bit. Yeah, yeah.
It's a nice little piece of wordplay. And I think it pretty much describes the female character pretty well. She is sort of a slow-witted maiden, like everybody in the whole city is slow-witted because they're on a bunch of tranquilizers 24/7.
Sure.
And she does not know the wording meaning of the word love. He says it turns into a slow and painful tour of a complexly automated community that is devoid of conscience and poetry. That's true. But you found it.
Well,
found
as it painful. Its point. Yeah, it's not. It's not, you know, it's me. That's the point of the film. It's like he's wants song and dance. I don't know.
But this movie is about a tour of this community. Right. I guess he didn't like that. He says, Mr. Godard is a great one for making shock impressions with vivid images. And he describes the scene of the executions in the swimming pool.
That was a good scene.
That was a pretty fucking awesome scene where they'd shoot it, then they'd send pretty women out to drown them if they hadn't died yet from the
gunshots.
They were
synchronized swimmers.
That
like
would go and synchronizedly drown the victim if he hadn't died.
From a distance, it almost looked like they were thrusting daggers into the dying victim, but you couldn't
really
tell.
I didn't see any weapons on them.
No. Interesting. Great execution theater, though.
That was a fucking awesome scene. But sort of to sum it up, he says, the dazzle of Mr. Godard's cinematic style is not matched by the hackneyed idea of a robot society.
Wow. Okay.
Even in 1965, he's saying this idea of this human society, a void of humanity, is hackneyed. So maybe it is hackneyed. I don't see how, even if it's hackneyed, it doesn't have value. But
well, hackneyed is... kind of half baked. Is that the definition?
I thought hackneyed means it'd been done a million times before. We've all seen it. We know the storyline. I don't need to be told this story again. Maybe that's the wrong definition of hackneyed.
No, I think you're right. Yeah.
And he says that the conclusion that love, good old love, conquers all is curiously disappointing finish for such a promising film. That is a little disappointing. I mean, the problem is that both these things have negative. The human passion has a lot of negatives, and inhumanity has a lot of negatives. I guess we have to strive for some sort of compromise that maximizes both.
Yeah. By the way, your definition of hackneyed was correct. Overused, making it insignificant, which is maybe my criticism, like I was trying to get to back earlier in the review, is I haven't. This is old territory, old trod territory, and
old trod territory in 65.
Yeah, well, as I was thinking about it, just by doing during this podcast, Metropolis is kind of that nature. If you've ever seen the old Fritz Lieber Metropolis,
I never had. That's one of the ones that's on my list to do a Lang film.
All right, well, we've milked Alphaville for all it's worth. Very French. Very avant-garde, very black and white.
I fucking like this movie.
Okay. Takes all kinds, as I say.
Did you
I don't know
like
if I'll ever revisit.
Film?
I was fine. You know, I had some pluses. It's one of those movies I wouldn't go back and watch. And so with that, I don't know if that's a criticism or not.
That's weird. I think I would go back and watch this film.
The French women are hot, super hot in this film. They were ahead of their time hot back in 60s France.
Really? You think? I mean, they don't have those weird, super low body fat, muscular bodies that are popular these days. They sort of have a They have a normal, slim, normal body fat percentage female body.
Well, I think it was just more
standard.
I think it was just more style and fashion and things that kind of teased it out of them a little bit more.
Oh, there were some great clothes. That's true. Natasha had that great coat, the black coat with the white fur on it. That was fucking lovely.
And like black go-go skirts or black go-go dresses. I love that stuff from the 60s. You know, kind of come down just halfway down the thigh, sort of form-fitting. Our next film for next week, we're going to do a Woody Allen film, Annie Hall, which I think is probably his most cherished film in a massive oeuvre.
Oh, God, he has done so many films. It blows
your
mind.
Puts out like one a year.
It's interesting you picked Annie Hall. I was, I've had him on the back burner for a while. And I was thinking maybe, you know, Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex but Were Afraid to Ask, or maybe Sleeper were the two ones that were bouncing around in my mind.
So they're a little too gimmicky.
Sort of playful. I like movies that are playful and fanciful a little bit, but I think Annie Hall's a solid pick.
It's a good film, and he has one out now. I really want to see Blue Jasmine. It's supposed to be really good.
Yeah, I've heard I've heard good things about that as well. Yeah, so Woody Allen should be fun.
All right, so until next week.
Au revoir, Monsieur Cochon.